This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Firstly, that the nature of the shiur, the nature of the learning that we're doing together is not one intended or designed to develop yediyus. It's not about just gaining more knowledge or awareness of the Gemara. For that kind of learning, the daf yomi type of shiurim are more effective, whether one moves at the pace of a daf a day or a little bit slower than that. The purpose of this is really to get our minds into thinking the Torah's way, to start thinking and learning in a lomdisher way, in a way that is true learning, and at the same time to be able to extract principles and insights from the way we learn and from the way we understand the Gemara, insights that we can actually apply, that we can actually live with, that enable us to see the world and to see life in a slightly different way. And therefore, we're going to get quite deep into some of the ideas starting today and tomorrow. Not that we haven't been learning deeply up till now, but you'll get a sense of some of the complexity. And that leads me into the second point, which is part of the idea of learning Torah. And here it's different from any other limud that I can think of, any other study of any other subject. Not intended for us to master Torah. That's not the intention. That's not even possible. We cannot master Torah. We really, the intention of learning, when we get into this type of learning, is to be mastered by Torah. And that's a really important difference between a more linear, secular approach to study and a Torah approach to study. And in one of my shiurim that's online on education and on Torah learning and why I really believe that apart from all the mitzvahs involved in the learning of Torah and the kedushas haTorah, apart from all of that, the mere process of limud Torah, the way it's meant to be done, the way it's classically been done, the important skills that one can acquire for the kind of thinking we need in current times. And to do that, it's really important to get into the Torah's way of thinking and not into our way of thinking. And one of the tragedies, I think, of modern learning and teaching of Torah is a lot of the time, in order to make the Torah easier for the secular mind, and by a secular mind I mean a linear mind, which is the way we're trained to think in most areas, in order to make Torah easier to understand for linear minds, there's been an attempt to present Torah in a linear way, which makes the Torah easier to understand. And it makes the Torah easier to master. But as I said a few moments ago, our intention is not to understand and to master the Torah as much as it is to be mastered by the Torah, which means what we want most of all is to re-engineer and rewire our thinking system to align itself with Torah rather than to repackage a sugya so as to align itself with our thinking system. And you'll see us getting into this more and more when we get into more complex areas, such as this week and next week. I'm not going to make any attempt to repackage the sugya in a linear way. Rather, I'm going to ask of you to work with me in thinking in the Torah's way, which is far more exponential than linear. It's what I call almost spherical thinking. You start at a center point, and you're moving out in multiple directions simultaneously and having to keep those multiple directions in your mind as you do it. And very often it's not possible to do it the first time you learn. That's why chazorah is so important, and I want to encourage you to try and find chavrusas. And that's why I'm actually hoping that we can expand the group. We've got about 10 or 12 regulars in the shiur at the moment. And if there are people you know that would enjoy it, I'm interested in trying to expand it so that you can also try and find chavrusas. Use the forum on iAwaken to communicate with one another and just find chavrusas that you can learn by telephone or otherwise chavrusas face-to-face or chavrusas who are not on the shiur but who you can learn with, so that you can actually practice some of this thinking, talk it out and reason with it. Again, the idea being to master the thinking or be mastered by the thinking of Torah, rather than to master the Torah itself. And in the process, I've often said that the process of learning Torah is very similar to the way we work on the internet. It's more like internet research in these ways than it is like any other form of study, in that we sometimes have several windows open at the same time. And we're working with all of them, although they're different, they're on different topics or they have different approaches. We're able to hold them in our mind as we work. And we hyperlink, and that's how we find connections and we make connections. So the methodology of internet research and study is more similar to the way the Gemara is structured than anything linear that we've had until now. So let's get into our sugya and get a sense of what I'm talking about. The sugya is on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. It's a very short sugya, but there's a lot in it. It's at the two dots in the about two-thirds down the page of Gimel Amud Aleph. And the linear topic, if you just go through it linearly, and then we'll see what it is exponentially, the linear topic is once again looking at the language of the Mishnah. Right until now, we've been discussing the language of the Mishnah, and from the language of the Mishnah, we've been able to extrapolate all sorts of principles that have been really interesting. And once again, we're looking at the language of the Mishnah, and what the Gemara is going to be exploring is the need for the number altogether. We've discussed up until now why the number Sholosh has to be in the feminine form rather than Shlosho as the masculine form, and so on. Now the Gemara is going to say, why do we need Sholosh at all? And why do we need Shnei Drochim when it talks about how a woman can be Koina herself? Why do we need to mention numbers? Usually, when a Mishnah mentions a number, it's to limit the possibilities. So, B'Sholosh Drochim, to say there are three ways that a woman can be acquired, would imply that there are other ways that one might think would work, but they do not work. And the Gemara is going to examine what are those other ways that I might have thought would work that do not work, as implied by the number Sholosh in the Mishnah. That's from a linear perspective, that's what's happening. Having discussed the gender of the Mishnah and various other terms of the Mishnah, we're now going on to the need for the number altogether. But from a more exponential perspective, we're going into something much deeper, and the topic of the sugya really is in this sugya, we're going to unpack the kinyan of chalipin. We're going to take our minds into the world of chalipin, into the world of kinyonim. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background to remind you of where we are, or to familiarize those of you who don't have that background as to what we're dealing with. And then we're going to move into this world. And in this sugya, for as long as we're in the sugya, whether it's 2 weeks or even a bit of a third week, our minds are going to be in the world of kinyonim. A kinyon is a mechanism used in the Torah to effect a transfer of ownership, primarily. It's used for some other things too, but it's to transfer ownership of property, of objects, or of rights. And sometimes of responsibilities and obligations. But let us restrict it for the moment to property, objects, or rights. When ownership of that is transferred, a kinyan needs to be used. Now, there are different dimensions to a kinyan. There is a dimension to a kinyan which is almost just symbolic. It's a timing, it's a demonstration. From this moment on, the ownership of object or property or rights X is transferred from A to B. So it clarifies the moment of transfer, and therefore clarifies the transfer of the responsibilities attached to that particular object, property, or right. But there are deeper meanings to kinyonim as well, as we've seen in the Mishnah with the kinyone issue, that they come to mean and to say a lot more than just indicating a moment in time where a certain right is transferred or where certain ownership is transferred, and that in kinyon there is actually process as well. Something's happening. There's an energetic change of forces in the world that happens at the moment of the kinyan. The kinyan actually induces a changed state of being in the world. The balance of the universe changes, to try and use some of that terminology. And one of the kinyonim that we've been working with up till now is the kinyan of kesef. We've been working with kesef in two areas. Kesef as it works with a field, Avram buying the sodeh, the field from Ephraim, and using kesef as the kinyan, money. We're seeing it also in issues that kesef is a kinyan kiddushin, that the handing over of monetary value from man to woman is the kinyan whereby the two of them agree to become husband and wife, morosim. And there is a second kinyan that we're going to be exploring, and this is the complex one, which is kinyan chalipin. Chalipin comes from the word lahachalif, which means to exchange. So it's a kinyan of exchange or a kinyan of barter. And there are two forms that this kinyan can take. The simple form of what it is assuming that I'm buying your, I'm here in California and you're in New York. You have, and we're sitting together in California. You have a car in New York. I have a car in California, and we're going to exchange them. We don't have to do a kinyan on both vehicles. If we're both in California, you drive my car in my presence, and that's not only a kinyan that from here onwards you have acquired the rights to my car. Simultaneously, I've acquired the rights to your car in New York. So the kinyan chalipin helps us not have to deal with two actions on two objects that may be geographically distant. That's kind of one of the simple uses of a kinyan chalipin. But it has another use as well, and that is sometimes when the object that is being transferred is not only too far to be have a kinyan acted upon it, so it's not just that I'm in California and the car I want to purchase is in New York. Or let's look at that case first. So let's say there's not chalipin. You're not going to buy my car, or we're not going to exchange cars. I'm going to buy your car. But the two of us are sitting in California, and your car is in New York. So we can still do a kinyan chalipin. I can give you a token. I can give you a piece of cloth. I can give you a scarf, which we call a sudar. And by giving you that, we've simulated the barter. I give you the sudo, you lift the sudo, make a kinyan on the sudo, and thereby not only have you acquired ownership rights to the sudo, but simultaneously I've acquired ownership rights to your car in New York. That would be a kinyan sudo. So the kinyan chalipin facilitates an act of kinyan on an object which is either too far to be koineh, or it is too big, too difficult. It's something that one cannot actually, for whatever reason, actually do a kinyan on. When we use kinyan suda, here's the interesting twist, that kinyan suda, you don't have to keep the scarf. There can be a very clear understanding between us that it's only symbolic. There can be a very clear understanding between us that I'm giving you the scarf merely to do a kinyan on. You lift up the scarf, but at no time is the intention that you can keep the scarf. And you hand it back to me, and you've done the kinyan. So now let's look at what we have here. We have really three different types of kinyan. On the one hand, we have a kinyan kesef, which is a true exchange of value. Your car costs $10,000, and I give you $10,000 as kesef. So whether or not kinyan kesef would work with a motor vehicle, let's say it's a field or a house that I'm buying for $100,000, and I give you $100,000, I give you the kesef, that's a kinyan kesef where there's been a transfer of true monetary value. Then there's barter, chalipin, where I don't give you cash or silver or gold, I give you an object that has value, and that's the kinyan chalipin. And the third one is a kinyan suda, where I actually give you nothing. I symbolically give you an object that has some value in it, or maybe doesn't have value in it. We'll look at that in the sugya as well. And by you being koine, that object, that you, the kinyan has been made, the total kinyan has been made. What we're going to be looking at in this sugya is, if you can imagine the two possibilities. We have kesef as a kinyan. We know that for sure. We have that in the Torah. We know there's such a thing as a kinyan kesef. What we've got to look at is, where does barter fit in? Because on the other extreme, we have kinyan suda. We know that too. That means we can do a symbolic kinyan that has no commercial value. I can give you a scarf. I can give you a handkerchief that is worth less than a pruto or that is that even if it's worth less than a prayer, I can give you a tissue, a Kleenex, and you can lift that up as a Kenyan Suda. So there has been no transfer of commercial value. That's a Kenyan Suda, and we know that that works too. So let's look at the two extremes. We have a Kenyan Kesef, which we know works, the transfer of value. We have a Kenyan Suda, which is symbolic and transfers no value. And in between, we have Halipin, which is barter. What we're going to be looking at in the sugya is, among other things, where does Halipin fit in? When we exchange real objects, where I give you a Rolex watch in return for a car, and you do a Kenyan on my Rolex watch, is that really a subset of Kesef? Have I given you the value of the Rolex watch so that you've actually, there's been a transfer of value and it's a form of Kenyan Kesef? When we say Kenyan Kesef, do we mean value, monetary value, or do we mean cash? If we mean cash, then Kesef would have to be silver or gold or coins or true monetary value. But if we mean value, if Kesef means monetary value, then it doesn't have to be cash. It could be an object of barter that has value. That's one possibility. The other possibility is to say, no, Halipin actually is a subset of Sudar. That we've got Kenyan Kesef, and that means a cash transaction. Then we've got objects that can be used for Kenyonim, where you're not going to use cash. You can use an object. In the case of Sudar, you can use a worthless object or an object which is intended to be returned to the Makneh. And in the case of Halipin, it can be something that does have value that would be transferred to the Koineh. And in the case of Halipin, it could be something that does have value that the Makneh is going to keep. And that is a true sense of value. So there are two ways of looking at bartering. Is bartering a subset of Kesef, or is bartering a subset of Sudar? Whichever way we're looking at it, we're looking at the two primary Kinyonim as Kesef on the one hand and Sudar on the other hand. Those are the two primary Kinyonim. Our question is, where does Halipin fit? Is bartering a subset of Kesef, or is bartering a subset of Halipin? A subset of Sudar. And that's what one of the things we're going to be looking at as we move in. So the Gemara starts off saying, Minyono de ratio limute mai, Minyono de sefer limute mai. There's a number mentioned in the ratio, there's a number mentioned in the sefer. The number mentioned in the ratio, Rashi says, is Gimel Drochin, Shloisho Drochin, there are three ways. Minyono de sefer, says Rashi, V'koino es atzmo b'shtei drochim. She can acquire herself back again from her husband in two ways, either through a get or misas habal. In each of those cases, the intention of including a figure, a number, must be limute, to exclude other things. And I want to know, limute mai, what is it that we're going to exclude? And today we're only going to be dealing with a ratio. Answers the Gemara, minyona de ratio limute chupa. I might have thought that chuppah is also a way that kiddushin could be affected, that if a man takes a woman under a chuppah and says, Hareyat mekudeshes li b'chuppah zu, and he uses chuppah not as nisuim the way we use it. The fact is we do them both under the chuppah, but really the chuppah belongs to the second piece of the marriage ceremony. The Kiddushin, the first piece of the marriage ceremony, is the giving of the ring and the two brochas that are made for Erusin, and that does not need to be made, it does not need to be said under a chuppah. The second piece, the Sheva brochas, is said under the chuppah. Now, what happens if the man doesn't do the second piece? He only does the first piece, and he doesn't give her a ring. He simply says, just as chuppah works for Nisuin, we're going to do chuppah for Kiddushin, and we'll do it again in a year's time for Nisuin. We'll do chuppah once again. The Mishnah comes to teach you that will not work. Chuppah is a kinyan valid for Nisuin, but it is not a kinyan valid for Kiddushin. And that's why it says, ha'isho nikneis b'sholosh drochim, a woman can be acquired only in three ways. It's either kesef, it's shtar, or it's bia, it's not chuppah. asks the Gemara, "Ulravuna de Omar Chupa Koine Mikalva Chomer Limutemai." What about Rav Huna, who learns a Kal Vachomer, which we will speak about later on, and deduces from that, extrapolates, that Chuppah is a valid way to be Koine, a woman, even for Erusin, for Kiddushin? There is a fourth way. There's Kesef, Shtar, and Bila, and according to Rav Huna, there is Chuppah as well. How does Rav Huna understand the Mishnah? How does Rav Huna understand the fact that there is that there are only three ways, and what about and Chuppah is a fourth after all? Answers the Gemara, Limute Chalipin. According to Rav Huna, and this applies not only to Rav Huna, it works with us as well, but certainly we come to it through Rav Huna, the fourth kinyan that I might have thought works but doesn't is not kinyan chuppah, because chuppah does work according to Rav Huna. The fourth kinyan which I might have thought works but doesn't is kinyan Chalipin. I might have thought that since we learned a gezeira shova from Sedei Ephron, and you will remember that we had a discussion as to whether that's a true gezeira shova or it's a kind of a secondary, a semi-gezeira shova, but not a full gezeira shova. Clearly, according to Rav Huna, we would have to be saying it's a full gezeira shova. And therefore, I might have thought that since we learn a gezeira shova from sode to isho, just as a field can be purchased with money, can be acquired with a kinyan kesef, so too a woman can be acquired with a kinyan kesef. In the same way, I would have thought, ma sode mekanye bechalipin, af isho nami mekanye bechalipin, that I can apply the gezeira shova also to the principle of chalipin. In just the same way as a field can be acquired with a kinyan chalipin, so a woman should be able to be acquired with a kinyan chalipin. Kamash malan, the Mishnah comes to teach us, no. There are only three ways that a woman can be acquired: kesef, shtar, bio, not chalipin. Asks the Gemara, ve'ema hachinami. Why not? Three good points. It's all very well to tell us that the Mishnah says there are only three and not four. There's only a kesef, shtar, and bira, but there's not chalipin. Why not chalipin? If we do have a full gzeira shova, then we should learn chalipin from Sedei Ephron. Just as a field can be acquired with chalipin, so can a woman. Answers the Gemara, fascinating answer. Chalipin isnehu befochos mishove pruto, ve'isho befochos mishove pruto, lo mekanya nafsho. Chalipin can work with an item that is worth less than a pruta. As we discussed earlier, I can use a Kleenex, I can use a tissue, a paper towel, a paper napkin. I can give as a kinyan, and it has no monetary value, certainly not anything more than a pruta, and nevertheless, it can work as a kinyan. The isho befochus mishove pruta loy mekanyon afsha, and a woman does not agree to be acquired for less than a pruta. Now, this answer of the Gemara, I don't think we're going to get into analyzing today. I think we're going to be analyzing that next week, because there's a lot to discuss about that, obviously. What does that mean? A woman is not makne herself for a pruta, but for two prutas she is. What does it really mean? And what happens if she agrees to be kona herself for a pruta, to be makne herself for a pruta? Surely it depends on her will. If she wants to, she could agree, and why would we not allow that? So we're going to have to go into that in some depth, but I don't think we're going to get that far in the time that's left to us. So let's go through, because there are one or two rashis that we're going to learn that are going to open a lot of different areas for us. So let's start the Gemara again and work through the rashi at the same time. The Gemara asks, Minyana de Resha Limutamai, Minyana de Sefer Limutamai. Minyana de Resha says Rashi, three lines from the beginning of the thick lines of Rashi, Gimel Drachim, and Minyana de Sefer is V'koine es Atzmo B'shtei Drachim. Says the Gemara, Minyana de Resha Lim Ute Chupa. Says Rashi, Lim Ute Chupa, She'im Mesoro Lo Aviha L'chupa, that if her father handed her over to her prospective groom using kinyan chuppah, L'shem Kiddushin, and he was using Chuppah as a vehicle for Kiddushin, not a vehicle for Nisuin. Eino Mekudeshes Bekach. We hold, other than Rav Huna, that she's not Mekudeshes, she doesn't need a get, she's not Asuro to other men, that Kinyan Chuppah has not been effective at all. That's what we would hold. So we need to pause on this Rashi. We're going to spend a bit of time on this Rashi. Because Rashi seems to go out of his way to bring us a peculiar example. And David Klinghoffer asked this question at the end of the last year. He stayed on the line for a few moments and had been preparing on and asked, why is it, I'm not sure if David's joined us or not, why is it that Rashi gives the example of a father handing over the daughter using Kinyan Chuppah? Why doesn't he give a simple example of a man uses Chuppah with a woman who's old enough not to have her father hand her over? So a man marries a 20-year-old woman and he uses Kinyan Chuppah. He wants to use Chuppah l'kiddushin. It won't work. Why doesn't Rashi just give that example, as the Tosfos Rid in fact does? If you've had an opportunity to print out the Tosfos Rid that I sent you, it doesn't matter if you haven't. But if you have, and you can refer to the Tosfos Rid, so that would be this on the second page that I sent you. The first page was a piece of Ran that comes from further on in the Gemara, which we might refer to today and next. Next week. And the second page, and then the second file I sent you, is Tosfos Rid and Tosfos Rosh. The beginning of the Tosfos Rid, if you look at the very bottom, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, the Tosfos Rid is the one that starts Lim Ute Chuppah, exactly the piece of Gemara that we're on, that the number 3 comes to exclude the fourth one, which is Chuppah. Perush explains the Tosfos Rid. Im Pirush Talisoy Oleho L'Shem Kiddushin. If a man put his talis over a woman, he made a Chuppah. Quickly, there was a woman. And he said, let's get married, and he puts a chuppah over the two of them. He hasn't got a ring, he's got nothing of value on him. He gets two witnesses, and he says, Harei at mekudeshes li b'chuppah zu kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. What would be the din? That's how the Tosfos Rid describes it, which is the simple way of describing it. Rashi, on the other hand, goes into an unusual situation and says, if a father gives a girl over to her groom, that means it's a ketano. He's marrying off a girl under 12, and he gives her over to a groom. And that is done using a chuppah. Eina mekudeshes bekach, it doesn't work. Why, asks David Klinghoffer, does Rashi give this unusual case instead of learning like the Tosfos Rid, that it's talking simply where the man puts a talis over his wife and wants to be mekadesh or bechuppah? Now, to do this, we need to answer that. The question is asked. It's a wonderful question. It's a wonderful aura to notice that in Rashi. It's bothered the Pnei Yeshua, and it bothers the Sefer HaMakne and other Achronim too. And both the Pnei Yeshua and the Makne offer explanations as to why Rashi has to do this. And I'm not even going to go into them, because frankly they just don't sit comfortably with me. They're complex answers from all over the place, and it shouldn't be necessary to get so complicated. So I want to take you through a methodology to try and resolve this. And again, it doesn't matter if you're not with me all the way through the methodology, because I'm going to have to move into a different piece of Gemara that you have not prepared. Firstly, you'll have opportunity to go over it again, and I'll review it again next week when you have had an opportunity to go over it. But just go through the reasoning, and you'll see how we can go about it. Here's how I looked at it. I said, okay, we're talking about a machlokes Rav Huna and the rest of us as to where the chuppah works. That's really the issue. And according to the first view, chuppah does not work, and that's why the Mishnah says sholosh, so as to tell you not the fourth, not chuppah. Rav Huna disagrees, and the Gemara actually adds, interestingly, that the Gemara does not just say, ul Rav Huna de omar chuppah koino mikalvach, sorry, the Gemara does not say, ul Rav Huna, the Omar Chupa Koine Limutamai. The Gemara adds Mikal Vachomer. That's very telling to me. And that troubled me a little bit. Why is it relevant to know how Rav Huna deduces that Chupa is one of the valid Kinyonim for Kiddushin? We're going to learn that on Daf Hey. And it's irrelevant for now. All that's relevant for us to know is that Rav Huna holds that Chupo is Koine. Why does the Gemara tell us that Rav Huna learns it from Kal Vachomer? So that led me down. Here we have a bit of the hyperlinking technology. That led me down saying, well, clearly the way Rav Huna learns it is going to be relevant to understanding this piece of Gemara. And in that, there might be a clue to Rashi. If you look at the Gemara, when it quotes Rav Huna, you've got a little Masoris Ashas that refers to the Gemara on Lekam on Daf Hey Amud Aleph. So if you go to Daf Hey Amud Aleph, there you'll find six lines from the bottom of the page in the second thick line of Daf Hey Amud Aleph. Omer Rav Huna, Chupo Koino, Mikal Vachomer. Chupo is Koine because of a Kal Vachomer. The next few lines, the Gemara tries a Kal Vachomer and rejects it. And then at the last line of Daf Hey comes the Kal Vachomer. Uma Kesef, the end of the page. Uma Kesef She'enu Gomer Koine. Kesef, which is not a complete Kinyan issue. Because if a young girl is acquired by her husband using Kinyan Kesef, she still remains under the authority of her father for certain things. The father still has the rights to her earnings, for example. So Kinyan Kesef is not complete. If a man has Kinyan Kesef, he acquires certain rights to the woman, but not the complete rights to the woman. And nevertheless, it works for Kinyan Kiddushin. This incomplete Kinyan is a valid Kinyan Kiddushin. Chupo, Rav Huna wants to say, she gomeres. Chupo, which is a complete Kenyan, it totally removes her from the authority of her father. Enodin shetikne. That should certainly work then for Kenyan Kesef. In other words, what is effected by Nisuin, the second part of the ceremony, through Chupo, is a much greater Kenyan, a much greater act of acquisition than what is effected in the first half by Kiddushin. Kiddushin takes a young girl partially out of the authority of her father, and Nisuin, the chuppah, takes her completely out of the authority of her father. If chuppah is a valid way to do that complete act at the end of the ceremony, the final removal of the girl from her father's authority, certainly chuppah is strong enough a kinyan to be able to do the first piece as well. That's the Kal Vachomer of Rav Huna. The Gemara then goes into a long and quite convoluted analysis as to different strengths that the different kinyonim have. There's something that Chupa has, there's something that Kesef has that Chupa doesn't have. So maybe Kesef is in fact stronger than Chupa. And the Gemara says, well, we can learn from Bia that strength is not applied. Well, there's something about Bia that's stronger than Kesef. Maybe that's why, and we'll say, well, shtar. So at the end of the day, the Gemara on Daf Hey Amud Beis learns Rav Huna's din, that Chupa works from all the other Kinyonim together. That means from the Kinyon Kesef, Kinyon Shtar, and Bia. From all of them together, we figure out that there's nothing special about those Kinyonim, they're regular Kinyonim, and they work for Kiddushin. Chupa, which is a much stronger Kinyon, Kal Vachomer, it will work. Then the Gemara goes on to an interesting piece. If you look inside, let me see how far down the page it is. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. About 13 lines from the top. At the beginning of the page, the Gemara asks, Ma lahatzad ashovo shobohen sheken yeshnan bal korchon? You cannot, even though you're trying to learn chupa from the other three kinyonim, from Kesef, Shtar, and Bio, there is a strength that they have that Chupa does not have. The strength that they have is there are situations where they are so strong that they work even against the will of the object or person being transferred. So Kesef, for example, works with an Amo Ivriya. You can use Kesef. A man can buy an Amo Ivriya, a young girl, as a maidservant to work in their home, even if the young girl doesn't agree to it. Kesef can work for that. And shtar works with a get. A man can divorce his wife theoretically even against her will. So you see that shtar is powerful. It can work against the will of the object being transferred. And bial in the case of yevama. Bial can be used as a kinyan in the case of yevama, technically, even if the yevama doesn't agree. So there's something powerful about kesef, shtar, and bial, and that is they can all be done by kocha. Chupa cannot be done by kocha. It has to be done with the willingness of the woman. And therefore, chupa is a weaker kinyan, and you can't learn chupa as a kal vachomer. Even though kesef, shtar, and bial work for kiddushin, chupa perhaps does not work for kiddushin, because it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that it works, and we cannot extrapolate using a kal vachomer that it works, because in fact chupa is a weaker kinyan than the others, in as much as it doesn't work bal kocha. Asks the Gemara of Rav Huna, what does Rav Huna say to that? How does Rav Huna learn chupa in that case? Answers the Gemara, Kesef mihas beishus lo ashkechon bal kocha. It's true in the case of Amo Ivriyo that there's a case of bal kocha, but not in ishus. In all cases of marriage, even if kesef is used in kiddushin, she has to be willing. That's why we said it says niknes and it doesn't say ha'ish koine, because it needs da'at, or she needs to be willing. And it, since kesef is also therefore weak in that sense, in the area of ishus, kesef cannot be used bal kocha, cannot be used against her will. Therefore, chupa also, which cannot be used against her will, is a valid kinyan, and that's how Rav Huna extrapolates it. If the last aspect of this piece of Gemara, look in the Rashi, three lines from the top. Kesef be'ishus mi'aloi ashkechon ba'alma ba'akocha. Rashi has a slightly different girsa, which we'll talk about when we get there. Ve'afilu hachi koino, kan, ve'af al korcho. Kesef works bal korcho. Rashi says, so Rashi claims, Rashi's learning the Gemara a little differently from the way we learned it, and this is what's relevant to our Rashi. Rashi says, what Rav Huna is saying is, kesef generally doesn't work bal korcho. I cannot buy your car with kesef if you don't agree. I cannot buy your field with kesef if you do not agree. But in the case of marriage, there is a case where kesef works, even though it doesn't work anywhere else bal korcho. In the area where a father can acquire kiddushin for his ktano daughter. Afani avi chupa, in the same way. Even though chupa can't work anywhere else, bal kocho, maybe here it can. Now, where would it be able to be used bal kocho? It would be the same as money, just as kesef cannot be used bal kocho of the girl, against the girl's will. If she's over 12, the only time it can be used bal kocho is if the girl is under 12. So chupa can only be used bal kocho of the girl, according to Rav Huna, with a girl under 12 whose father gives her away. So the whole source of Rav Huna's din, with which the rest of us disagree, that chupa can work, is learnt out of a situation where it's bal kocho, where it's against the girl's will, where the husband is married, where the father is marrying her off without the will of the girl, or the will of the girl is unimportant to us in this particular transaction. That's the whole source of this din, the whole machlokes, where it all breaks down. Rav Huna learns that chupa works because kesef works when a father gives a girl over, and he extrapolates that to chupa. And according to the others, they say, no, chupa has no ability to work bal kocho. With that in mind, come back to our Rashi, and we'll understand why here, since we're talking about that kal vachomer, and that's why the Gemara uses the word kal vachomer, six lines from the bottom. Ul Rav Huna d'omar chupa koine mi kal vachomer. Don't forget, Rav Huna's whole source is that kal vachomer. What does Rav Huna then say about chupa? So the whole argument here about whether the number three in the Mishnah excludes chupa or isn't, is around the kal vachomer that Rav Huna learns and the others do not learn. And that kal vachomer is learnt in a case of a father giving away his young daughter. That's why Rashi says, Limute chupa, she mesorola avia lechupa l'shem kiddushin ena mekudeshes bekach. The others, other than Rav Huna, hold that chupa cannot work bal kocho. That's the weakness of chupa. And since chuppah cannot work by al-korcho, it cannot work at all for Kiddushin. And Rashi gives us the example of the very case around which the Kal Vachomer is constructed. It doesn't mean that that's the only case. Of course, chuppah won't work, even if it's, as in the Tosfos Reads case, it's a man marrying an adult woman. Chuppah will also not work as Kiddushin. But Rashi brings us the case of a father marrying off a young girl because that's where we learn from that chuppah doesn't work. If it weren't for that case, we would agree with Rav Huda that chuppah does work for Kiddushin. It's specifically in the case of Baal Korcho that the process of extrapolating chuppah breaks down for us, and that's why we say limute chuppah, and that's why Rashi gives us that particular example. So there's an approach. I'm just trying to share with you a methodology of understanding a Rashi, noticing that a Rashi is unusual. As David Klinghoffer noticed, the Rashi is unusual. Just we know it becomes more unusual when you see the Tosfos Reads. So you see not everybody explains it like Rashi. Other Rishonim explain it simply. Rashi, therefore, is taking an unusual route for some reason, noticing that the Gemara refers to the Kal Vachomer of Rav Huna where it didn't need to do so, going over and then learning the Kal Vachomer of Rav Huna on Daf Hei, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis, and finding that that whole Kal Vachomer is built around the issue of Baal Korcho in the case of a father giving a daughter over, using either Kesef or Chuppah, and then understanding why Rashi structures it in this particular way. Conceptually and philosophically, what emerges from this is also quite an interesting idea, at least for those other than Rav Huna, is that there is a qualitative difference between chuppah and the other kinyonim, and maybe that's why for nisuin we use chuppah, and that is the very idea of chuppah is not bal korcho, according to everybody other than Rav Huna. That's where chuppah fits into a completely different set of kinyon. Kesef, shtar, and bia have dimensions of bal korcho. There are situations where they can be used bal korcho, where the other party can be coerced into a situation using these three kinyonim. Chuppah cannot be, there's no coercion with chuppah because the very concept of chuppah is one of harmony. What is chuppah? Chuppah is putting a canopy at life. It's creating a little home. It's creating a symbolic home and husband and wife both entering that home in the presence of witnesses. And although it's not yichud, there's a whole discussion about the relationship between chuppah and yichud. That leaving that aside, chuppah is not yichud, it's in public, it's open. But it is a symbolic home. It's a covered area that is well-defined, belongs, according to the Rambam, if I'm not mistaken, the husband should actually own the chuppah or should own the ground on which the chuppah is. And many people actually arrange that the groom rents the piece of ground on which the chuppah is standing for the period of the chuppah, so that he brings his wife into his home. The whole idea of that is harmony. The whole idea of that is agreement, is a sharing of minds and a sharing of visions. And so the very idea of bal korcho goes against chuppah. In Kiddushin, there's a little bit different. And although Kiddushin also has to be with her agreement, and other than the case of ketana, of a girl under 12, there can't be an act of kiddushin without her agreement. But there is a case where it could be without her agreement. The nisuin piece, the chuppah piece, if you're using chuppah as the kinyan, that always has to be with her agreement and with her positive and active involvement. So that's that particular Rashi. The next Rashi that we're going to look at, but we won't have time to go in right now, is go further in the Rashi, Rav Huna, Lekaman Bishmaitin. Notice that Rashi refers you to that Gemara. Rashi does not always do that. If Rashi says Lekaman Bishmaitin Dav Hei Amud Aleph, then Rashi wants you to learn that Gemara. So what we've just done in spending our time going to Dav Hei and learning that Gemara is what Rashi wants you to do in order to understand the way he's explaining the Gemara. If it was just a reference from another Gemara, then the Masoreis HaShas would bring it, and there would be no need for Rashi to reference it. If Rashi references that Gemara, that's part of Rashi's Perush. Rashi wants you to learn that Gemara in order to understand the Rashi, which is what we've just done. Chalipin, according to Ravuna, which is the kinyan that is excluded by the number three? We said it's kinyan chalipin. And Rashi adds, that is kinyan suda. That's not a barter chalipin. That's talking about kinyan suda. That's talking specifically about the kinyan suda, which is the token kinyan where the object need have no value. That's primarily what we're talking about. And this is what's going to lead us into the whole analysis of what is a kinyan suda, what is kinyan chalipin, is bartering a subset of kesef, or is bartering a subset of suda, of kinyan chalipin, what is the differences between them, why do they sometimes work and they sometimes don't work, and why do they not work in the case of Isha. For this piece, it'll be helpful, we'll do it next Sunday, Mitz Hashem, it would be helpful for you to learn the Tosfos Rid. So you've got that on the second page that I sent you, and the third. The reason I sent you an additional file, I'm not quite sure how it came to you, but that third page of Tosfos Rid, the third image, which was the Tosfos Rid, didn't come out complete, so I sent it again in a second file. But it's a piece of Tosfos Rid, it's not a difficult Tosfos Rid, but it's quite a revolutionary one. And we're going to use that Tosfos Rid as a basis for understanding Kinyan Suda and Kinyan Chalipin using the Avnei Miluim's understanding of the Tosfos Rid. I'm going to send you the Avnei Miluim during the week as well. I'm not requiring that you learn it, and even the Tosfos Rid. If you don't have the opportunity or the ability to learn through the Tosfos Rid between now and next Sunday, don't worry about it. We'll learn it through together. It would just be helpful if you can. Those of you who want to look at the Avnei Miluim, it's in Simen Chof Tes, Sif Cotton Bays. I'll scan in the relevant piece. It's a long piece of Avnei Miluim, but the piece that concerns us is relatively short, and we might be part of it inside, but I'll certainly summarize the Avnei Miluim outside because of its classical nature in understanding the relationship between Kinyan Suda, Kinyan Chalipin, and Kinyan Kesef. So that's I'll review what we've done very briefly when we start off next week, and then we'll launch into an analysis of the second difficult Rashi. The first Rashi was the Rashi that told us that Kinyan Chupa, the Havamina that Kinyan Chupa would work, we're talking about where a father hands over a girl and why Rashi does that. And the second difficult Rashi is where Rashi says that Kinyan Chalipin is referring to Kinyan Suda, and he doesn't leave it alone as a regular Kinyan Chalipin. What is Rashi telling us by saying what we're primarily talking about here is Kinyan Suda, not a regular Kinyan Chalipin? So once again, thanks for joining. I'll stay on the line to take any questions, and look forward to hearing from you during the week if you wish, and certainly to learning with you.
Thank you, Rabbi Lapin.
Thank you. Rabbi Lapin, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure. I'm just going to put the recording off, and then we'll say if it was held on one moment.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks.